Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's Friday, November 18th, 2016. When Obama was in transition to become president, he talked about putting together what he called a cabinet of rivals. And he did that. The early indications are that Donald Trump is building a cabinet of deplorables. Ouch. Jeff Sessions, Attorney General? This is an insult to most Americans. Jeff Sessions has been a senator from Alabama for a number of years, and he was once appointed by Ronald Reagan to a federal court position, but his nomination was blocked because information surfaced about his racist comments. I went to Roger Shuler, the embattled journalist who has produced some of the most revealing coverage of the cesspool of politics and criminal justice in the state of Alabama. And I asked Roger, who helped us understand the Don Siegelman case and has covered the Riley family, the machine that runs or has been running politics in Alabama over the last few years, the same machine that trumped up charges of libel and defamation against Roger Shuler and had him jailed for 5 months. So I asked Roger, what do you think about Jeff Sessions for Attorney General?
It's hard to imagine a worse pick, a worse nominee. He's a dreadful human being. He's a racist. I mean, that's well on the record. He's been rejected already for a U.S. federal judgeship because of his racist comments. He's been known to call the prominent black attorney in Alabama boy. He's spoken disparagingly of civil rights organizations. He's intentionally tried to just gloss over civil rights cases, not prosecute them. He's very much against immigration and for extremist approaches to that. I just don't think he's got and just a big issue for me, and people know this who read my blog, is just basic integrity. I don't think the rule of law means anything to him. I don't think he has any integrity. Alabama has one of the, maybe the worst, just so-called justice system in the United States for sure, and it probably would fall well below the justice systems of a lot of third world countries.
Roger, explain to our listeners here the connection between Jeff Sessions and the Riley machine that has been, you know, recently running the state. They ran you into jail for 5 months behind a bogus claim of libel. And, you know, there is, I've described it as a cesspool, but to what extent is Jeff Sessions at the top of the corrupt structure, political structure in Alabama?
Well, he's been a U.S. senator for that whole time. He is tied to Bob Riley. He helped put Mark Fuller on the federal bench, who's largely responsible for Don Siegelman being in prison. And you and I have talked about that case many, many times. And the Rileys are, as you say, this is, and I know this personally. I mean, this is a little preview for people. For people who think we need to give Donald Trump, give him a chance. He's really not that bad. No, he's worse than bad if he's picking people like Jeff Sessions. And I've seen it. I've lived through it. I had Alabama cops come in my garage, inside my house with no warrant, and drag me off, beat me up, spray me with mace. My wife, they tried to get her. And had they gotten both of us, we probably would have been murdered. And I've written that, so that's not that you're just catching me in an emotional moment. I mean, these people are as bad as it can get. They are organized crime. They are worse than the mafia. And the notion of Jeff Sessions being the Attorney General of the United States you know, it's like Tiny Tim conducting the New York Philharmonic or something.
That's a beautiful one. Roger, one of the other issues is that Jeff Sessions clearly holds a lot of sway with Donald Trump. He was virtually the only U.S. senator to endorse Trump, and he did so pretty early in the process. So he's going to get rewards and payback. There is this open Supreme Court seat that the Republicans have obstructed Obama's effort to, replace Justice Scalia. And so right off the starting line, the administration gets to pick a Supreme Court nominee. On the list that has been published by the Trump campaign is Alabama's Judge Bill Pryor, who is a protege of Jeff Sessions. And I'm linking to your blog today, and we're warning people that there is a nude photo of Bill Pryor from his younger days when this photo appeared on gay dating sites. And you've pointed out the hypocrisy of Bill Pryor as a judge. He operates as a homophobe and was deeply opposed to same-sex marriage. And he would be a real monster on the court. And you have been doing your work as a journalist to help people understand what a true figure of hypocrisy Bill Pryor is.
Oh, I mean, it's breathtaking. I mean, these people, they think apparently in a way, Peter, that normal people can't think. I mean, I'm not qualified to diagnose anybody with any condition, but I mean, the narcissism, the sociopathy, we are heading for dark, dark days. If somebody doesn't get to the bottom of how Donald Trump got elected, first of all, if Russian hackers were involved, but Pryor is, you know, Trump listed, I think released first back in maybe February, a list of 21 people that he considered Supreme Court nominees. And my judgment is that Bill Pryor is at the very top of that list. I mean, I think he's number one.
Wow.
And it has nothing to do with his qualifications. It has everything to do with his ties to Jeff Sessions. Somebody wrote an article the other day here in Alabama. Well, actually, I've forgotten where I am. I'm actually in Missouri at the moment, but I'm from Alabama. That's what I consider home until I got run out. I mean, I literally got run out. We're living like refugees.
Yeah.
And all because of the Rileys and Sessions and Pryor and people like them. And of course, Don Siegelman is residing in jail,
mm-hmm.
in prison, federal prison in Oakdale, Louisiana.
Right.
And Pryor is, like you say, he's the height of hypocrisy. He has absolute ties to 1990s. Pornography, gay pornography.
That's Roger Shuler, my go-to expert on Alabama politics, talking about Jeff Sessions. And I promise to conduct a longer conversation with Roger if and when confirmation hearings are held for Senator Sessions to become Attorney General. And I'd like to note that Roger Shuler and his wife Carol have paid quite a price for his courageous reporting. And on his blog today, as we reference in the podcast, is this very damaging photograph of a young Bill Pryor, who now sits on the federal bench and is believed to be a leading candidate for Supreme Court. So Roger Shuler has shown a lot of courage where the corporate media and others have failed us. And I hope you can support him and Carol. They live in a weekly rental motel in Missouri, and they're barely making it from week to week. So if you're in a position to help, go to the link that I've put in the show file for today's podcast to the Legal Schnauzer blog and help out as much as you can. And you have my gratitude for that. In addition to the Jeff Sessions nomination, Trump has signaled that Michael Flynn, a retired lieutenant general who was fired by the Obama administration while running the Defense Intelligence Agency, will be the top national security advisor. And Flynn, who kind of broke ranks and protocol to support Trump, most military people hang back during the political process. Well, he has been really blatant in his support. And he's one of those people who is a Muslim hater. That's my language for it. because he has joined Trump in, you know, using the term Islamic extremism, Islamic jihadis, Islamic terrorists. And this is seen as bold and politically correct in the United States. But it is downright stupid. And it ends up labeling a whole religious group that accounts for millions, if not a billion, people around the world. And General Flynn is comfortable with that kind of language, and he is being rewarded with a top appointment in the Trump cabinet. Also, they've named the choice for CIA director, and he's a backbencher in Congress. He's only been there for 6 years. He got there because the Koch brothers funded his first campaign. He's from Kansas, a Republican, and his name is Mike Pompeo. And about the only prominence he has reached so far is that he was one of the loud voices on the Benghazi committee trying to nail Hillary Clinton in the political witch hunt that they maintained. And like so many, they missed the big picture of the bad advice that Hillary Clinton gave and that Barack Obama took to get involved in Libya in the first place. And they've played a game because they know that the Benghazi outpost was a CIA operation, grabbing guns from Libya and running them into Syria. And Clinton has never been able to publicly describe that because it's covert. So they had her over a barrel. And as I've said, the real issue was the Libya policy writ large, not the incident in 2012 in Benghazi. So Pompeo is aged 52. They say he graduated first in his class from West Point, served as a cavalry officer patrolling the Iron Curtain before the fall of the Berlin Wall. He got a Harvard Law degree and then returned to Kansas where he ran a company. And it was the Koch brothers who gave $80,000 to him back in 2010, more than they gave to any other candidate that year, to help propel him into Congress. And he has defended the Koch brothers, writing op-eds saying, stop harassing the Koch brothers. So he's very definitely in their pockets. And that's just another concern that we have to have about elevating him to run the CIA. And there's a little bit more on Pompeo. We'll get to that in just a second. But in Germany yesterday, President Obama gave an interview to the respected newspaper Der Spiegel. And he was asked if he will pardon Edward Snowden. And he falsely stated, I can't pardon somebody who hasn't gone before a court and presented themselves, so that's not something I would comment on at this point. Now, the editor of a blog called the Pardon Power blog said Obama's wrong. He noted that Obama has previously only granted pardons and commutations to people who've already been convicted. And he said, I just think what he may have better said is, I prefer that he present himself to a court and then we'll talk turkey. But the Supreme Court ruling from 1886 is clear. The power of pardon conferred by the Constitution on the president is unlimited except in cases of impeachment. It extends to every offense known to the law and may be exercised at any time after its commission, either before legal proceedings are taken or during their pendency or after conviction and judgment. The power is not subject to legislative control. So Obama, the constitutional law professor that some Democrats have suggested should be appointed to the Supreme Court by President Hillary Clinton. Oh, I guess we don't have to worry about that anymore. But I found that to be a ridiculous proposal. Now, coming back to Ed Snowden and Mike Pompeo, the would-be CIA director. Well, Pompeo has called for the execution of so-called traitor Edward Snowden. In a letter in 2014, he accused Snowden of intentional distortion of truth that he and his media enablers have engaged in. Pompeo supports virtually no legal barriers to having the NSA spy on Americans and has alarmed civil liberties advocates with many of the positions that he's taken while serving on the House Intelligence Committee. Not only has he argued that the NSA should resume its phone records program, he has called on Congress to pass a law reestablishing collection of all metadata and combining it with publicly available financial and lifestyle information into a comprehensive searchable database. And that, of course, is the perfect tool for a police state. Pompeo is also a staunch defender of the prison at Guantanamo, calling it an important national asset and repeatedly arguing that closing it would endanger Americans. He has defended CIA torturers, saying that these men and women are not torturers and that the programs were being used within the law. Oh, yeah. And then he called the Senate torture report some liberal game being played by the ACLU and Senator Feinstein. So this is a very troubling hardliner who Trump has selected, and he wasn't on the radar, I think, of most people. We'll see how he fares in the upcoming confirmation hearings. Also in Germany, the president held a joint news conference with Angela Merkel, and among other things, he took on the issue of fake news that was circulating in social media before our election. And I am really floored by some of his comments. He said, in an age where there's so much active misinformation, and it's packaged very well and it looks the same when you see it on a Facebook page or on your television, if everything seems to be the same and no distinctions are made, then we won't know what to protect. Well, hold on a minute. The leading purveyor of disinformation, of false information, of pure propaganda is the United States government. They lie repeatedly, whether it's about a drone strike and how many civilians were killed, or about the extent to which they are surveilling innocent people using Stingray and other furtive means right here in the United States in clear violation of the Fourth Amendment. So, I mean, on the narrow sense here, I share the president's concern. I don't think false information should be circulated by anyone. But we have a First Amendment that protects our right to free speech, even if that speech is false. And I am still, noting that this kerfuffle is all focused on false news that favored Donald Trump, either because it was critical of Clinton or it said something false but positive about Trump. Well, I have been talking until I'm blue in the face about David Brock's spin operation, about the trolls that were paid by the PAC, the Super PAC, Correct the Record, to go online and hassle people who posted honest commentary that was critical of the Clinton campaign. Then there was Blue Nation Review, a phony news outlet that produced daily propaganda favorable to the Clinton campaign. They attacked Sanders and Stein along the way, and as the primaries ended, they shifted their attacks to Trump. And so this is being played. I'm using the New York Times here as my news source and the president's comments. And what we see is the corporate media saying, well, yeah, Trump was circulating a lot of false news. Well, he wasn't the only one. And we're now hearing that the Trump campaign had a sophisticated, automated army of Twitter chatbots. And also the Clinton campaign had their own automated army of Twitter chatbots. But in the weeks before the election, the Trump chatbots were overwhelming the Clinton chatbots by 5-1. And so there was a concerted effort by both sides to control the narrative, to shape our perceptions. The Clinton campaign was buzzing about those poll numbers that showed that Hillary had it in the bag. And they were hoping that enough people would believe that, that it would transfer to reality. And so we live in a case of what our friends at Project Censored call a truth emergency. And there is so much bullshit flying around. And I will return to my central point. The U.S. government is the major egregious offender in this arena. Interesting rumor from two anonymous sources cited by The Intercept that the national security team of the Trump transition is planning to dismantle the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. Now, when I hear Trump talking about, you know, redesigning government, shrinking it, closing departments, and, you know, things of that sort, I'm highly skeptical that he would do anything meaningful. But this is a move that, if it goes forward, I actually have some support for. The devil's in the details, but they want to abolish the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. And this was something that came out of the 9/11 Commission, where they said, well, CIA wasn't talking to the NSA, so let's put them both under one umbrella, and then they'll connect the dots and they'll collaborate. It hasn't really turned out that way, and James Clapper has been an embarrassment as Director of National Intelligence. Now, it's not that easy to reconfigure, because it was an act of Congress from 2004 that created this new agency at the same time that they created the Department of Homeland Security. And I wasn't crazy about either one of those moves. And now the Director of National Intelligence has amassed an entity that doesn't directly control the 17 intelligence agencies that are under its purview. They nominally control the budgets, but the Director of National Intelligence can't hire or fire people in the CIA or the NSA or the Defense Intelligence Agency, for example. And so, in many ways, it is a meaningless kind of coordination post. And with almost 1,750 employees, well, I'm not sure that this is an agency that we need. And so, preliminarily, I will say that I am intrigued by this idea. And I will take these things as they come from Team Trump and offer you my comments, some of which you can hear. I will offer support when I think they're doing things that make sense. Every day I like to pause for a second and thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. And there are people like, I got to turn the page here, get some new names. I print out a list from PayPal each week, and that's where I grab the names of the people that I acknowledge. So here we have Faith Peoples, one of my staunchest supporters, Nick Yaksich. We got a payment from Bob Donjakur. He is still in the hospital, hasn't recovered from that nasty accident between his bike and a car. And Carla Mahoney is a longtime, well, actually a new subscriber this time. And I want to thank you each for your support. So if you're not a supporter, you've never heard me mention your name, we can fix that. Come on over to peterbcollins.com. You click the menu button, then you click Become a Subscriber. It takes you to the sign-up page where the bonus books are displayed for anyone who takes out a new annual subscription and gives me a mailing address here in the continental U.S. And Chloe's piping up because she's urging you to take out a new subscription today. Thanks, Chloe. This period between the election and the inauguration of the new administration is called the lame duck session. And Congress has been extremely lame, and they're getting even lamer. Now there is a scheme advanced by the Trump team and embraced by House Speaker Paul Ryan to just pass what are called continuing resolutions related to the budget bills that have not yet been settled. And this would push them into the new term and allow the Trump administration to shape those budgets in a way that could help them or hurt us in the very first year in office. And what's interesting is that the ducks are not in full agreement between the lame ducks in the House and the lame ducks in the Senate. Mitch McConnell, in a vague statement, said discussions are ongoing about how to fund the government and for how long. But there are some senators, like Roy Blunt from Missouri, who says, I would much rather get it done this year. My preference is to do it now and not get bogged down early next year. And there are other Republicans who have similar sentiments. So it remains to be seen just how much work the lame ducks will do, and we can't expect a lot. But shifting it into the new administration has grave risks for a lot of programs that could be cut, and cut very quickly. And that's a concern that we have to be vigilant about. Also, on Capitol Hill, Nancy Pelosi has drawn an official challenger for the Democratic leader of the House, the minority leader. He is Congressman Tim Ryan of Ohio. I don't believe there's any relationship between Tim Ryan and Paul Ryan. Tim Ryan comes from the Youngstown Rust Belt area, and he says that, you know, he's more in touch with workers who voted for Trump this time. I don't think Pelosi is vulnerable, but this is a turbulent year, and we'll see how that plays out. Today, I'm releasing an in-depth interview with my friend Thomas Frank. And Tom Frank is the guy who wrote What's the Matter with Kansas, explaining why Republicans could be persuaded to vote against their self-interest. He also most recently published Listen Liberal, Whatever Happened to the Party of the People. And he is a leftist critic of the Democratic establishment. And we had a great conversation. I pointed out at one stage that Tom Frank seems to be having way too much fun considering the doom and gloom of our circumstances today. But in this excerpt, you're going to hear him talk about the way the Clintons played the left and that they kept saying, you know, don't press your issues because we need Wall Street's money to get elected. And Tom Frank calls bullshit on that.
All our lives, Peter, the Clinton faction of the Democratic Party has been telling you and me that no, we can't do your issues. We can't do what you want us to do because we have to reach out to the rich. We have to become a party of Wall Street. And you're like, well, why do you have to do that? And they say, because you have to match the Republicans dollar for dollar every election year or else you'll lose. We have to be able to raise as much money as them. Now, you go back and you look at Franklin Roosevelt. He didn't raise anywhere near. The Republicans always outspent him massively, right? At any Democrat, up until very recently, Republicans always outspent them massively. They still won. Okay, the first Democrat to outspend a Republican was, of course, Bill Clinton, outspent Bob Dole, and Barack Obama did it. Hillary Clinton outspent Donald Trump 2-1.
Right.
And she lost.
And she had more dark money in her campaign, even though she was the one saying she'd push to overturn Citizens United.
Yes, and she lost. But what this means is that all of those arguments about how they have to be friends with the banks or else we can't win, it's all bullshit.
Yeah.
And I can say that because it's a podcast,
yes,
right?
You can.
And, yeah, it turned out to all be bullshit.
You can hear my full interview with Tom Frank. I'm releasing it to subscribers today at peterbcollins.com. Tune in, iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, wherever you find my podcast. The only place you don't hear the interview podcasts is on YouTube, where we deliver the free daily news and comment podcast that you're listening to right now. But because of all the glitches and doodads, we can't control the subscription side of the in-depth interviews on YouTube. So you have to go to our other outlets to find the in-depth interviews. Got that? Couple of good editorials in today's Friday New York Times. The first addresses Trump's plan to deport up to 3 million people. And the Times responds with some rational arguments. First of all, Trump's comment on 60 Minutes the other night that there are 2 to 3 million criminal immigrants without papers who he would like to deport immediately. Well, according to the Migration Policy Institute, of the country's estimated 11 million unauthorized immigrants, only about 820,000 have criminal records, and only 300,000 of those have felony convictions. So those are the people that Trump was talking about. But his numbers are off by a factor of 10. So he also said that, he wants to eventually deport others. And the Times points out that it took the Obama administration 8 years to deport a total of 2.5 million immigrants. And the idea that Trump can do that many people in, you know, a very short period of time is pretty far-fetched. The editorial says he can't just load 2 million people onto buses and planes and ship them out. He'll first have to stuff them into the bottleneck of the immigration courts where there are too few judges and lawyers and fill detention cells to bursting. Trump may be unaware of due process or in denial about it, but the Times points out, stoutly, it exists. And he goes on to say, the editorial does, if Trump begins a senseless purge, all segments of society will need to speak out and defend the vulnerable. And I concur with that. The Times also takes on an issue that I haven't raised so far because I haven't heard it coming from Trump or any of his inner circle. But on Wednesday night, a prominent supporter of Trump's named Carl Higbee went on Fox News with Megyn Kelly to defend the idea of a national registry of all Muslims. And this has produced a wave of fear and resentment, negative memories of the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II, and a determination by many of us not to relive that bad episode. But Trump is working on the fears of average Americans, and this is a very bad idea to round up Muslims, to create a registry, and we can hope that Democrats will be able to water down or block any maneuvers he makes in that particular direction. And finally today, a study coming out of the University of Calgary in Canada, that's in Alberta, studied the issues of fracking and earthquakes. And we know here in the United States that places like Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Oklahoma that have no seismic activities to, of any significance in the past, have been the scenes of significant earthquakes in the range of 4 to 5 on the Richter scale. Now, in Canada, these scientists took a look at earthquakes near Fox Creek in the central part of Alberta province. They say that the quakes were induced in two ways, by increases in pressure as the fracking occurred, and for a time after the process was completed, by the pressure changes brought on by the lingering presence of fracking fluid. The key message is that the primary cause of injection-induced seismicity in Western Canada is different from the central United States. So they say that the recent earthquakes in Oklahoma and other parts of the U.S. have been caused by the burial of wastewater from all kinds of oil and gas wells rather than from the fracking process itself. So this is a very interesting finding, and I will link to the story from the New York Times in the show file for today's podcast so you can take a closer look. But I think that this is an important scientific breakthrough. Of course, given the changes in our government, the dominance of Republicans who deny climate change, who consider fracking to be the gateway to energy independence, I'm afraid this study will gather dust on a shelf for at least the next 4 years. Thanks for listening to my Ranting and Raving, my news and comment podcast, available every day on YouTube. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.